shit.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. Once you check in, you can never leave. How's it going, lads?
How's it going?
Well, you're just talking before the show about how you've been getting actual sleep. So if you stake with Big Balls Blockchain, you're going to be A-OK. CTO / CEO of the company is well rested and ready for action.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is, of course, pager duty. So
if your baby
always ready to wake you up at a moment's notice.
If your baby lets you get 7 hours of sleep a night, the chances are pager duty will not.
Well, one night. I don't know if we could call that a regular occurrence yet. But
yeah.
Maybe it was just having a really good dream that night about the, restaking. Schiltzy, how's Eigenlayer going? I think you're a validator there, aren't you?
I didn't realize you called your son Eigenlayer.
That's right.
Oh, hang on. I have to run downstairs for a second.
Well,
level of professionalism. I'm sorry about that, Schiltzy. How is Eigenlayer going? I'm interested. I'm still here.
I mean, it's not. Eigenlayer remains bullshit. Like, what is there to say? They turned on inflation, but it's just like ICS, where there's a bunch of people jumping into things and no one gets rewards. So it's just as expected.
So, yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I mean, that was kind of predictable, wasn't it, in the end?
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't think what I've seen in this last week, crypto news. So Eigenlayer, whatever. I saw that Henry from Penumbra, who has been on the show before, posted a thing about payment links, which is pretty interesting. I've followed up with him on a couple of questions about some of the local state stuff. Local state stuff, or was it local ZK stuff? I can't remember. It's quite late here. And he was very kind in providing some links, some stuff that I got to read. But yeah, the payment link stuff looks pretty interesting as a design thing. I mean, just in back to the thing of like, I just continue to be impressed by the engineering and thought that goes into Penumbra as a project.
I mean, every time I've interacted with Henry or anyone on the Penumbra team, it's always been a really good interaction. Maybe more from my side than their side, because I'm always like blown away because they're really smart. But I have no idea what they're actually saying. So like, I'm like, wow, they're doing such cool things. I don't really know what's actually going on.
Yeah, it can. It do be a bit like that. So, yeah. Null, to summarize, Null is now back from the toilet or wherever. Eigenlayer,
I let someone in the door, if you wanted to know. I don't have an automatically opening front door. I had to go down and open it.
Like, now I need more explanation.
it's a classic statement.
Like someone was knocking on the door. I had to go down and open it to let them in.
Okay.
Yeah. What? Does that not happen at your house?
It's just the wording's kind of strange. Like, it makes me wonder, like, there's a delivery and you just kind of like let people, delivery people kind of let free reign, or is it?
No, it's someone who's visiting.
Okay. Got it. That makes more sense. All right.
Okay, sorry, a visitor came. I had to come and let them in.
Got it. All right. Okay, it kind of seems like some random fellow just popped in.
Oh, you're knocking? In you come.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now we've established the idiomatically correct way of saying that you have a visitor in your house. The summary of the Eigenlayer question was it remains bullshit, I believe.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, yeah. I mean, having some discussions with like other networks and some protocols that are in development, like it comes up more often than you would think. They would say, oh, and at some point we're going to introduce restaking on Eigenlayer, so you'll need to have a validator there. And we're like, huh, all right, okay. Have you been witnessing the same thing, Schiltzy?
But why, other than Eigenlayer has lots of marketing?
I haven't researched Eigenlayer, so I don't know what it does. So there you go.
So the problem is, let's say you get $1 million of ETH stake, or let's say $100 million in ETH stake to you, right? That seems like a pretty big number, okay? Yeah. You will be absolutely nothing compared to the top validators on EigenLayer. And so you're going to get basically no rewards for it. So literally $100 million is like 0.01% of this restaked ETH. And so there's just not a lot of point to participate in it.
So it's really only for the big boys.
Correct. Yes.
Mm, gotcha. And like, what do they do with the restaked ETH exactly? Like, okay, you go and stake your ETH again, and then what? Like, how do you?
So that is that is what it is. So you have like Lido staked ETH, right? That's liquid staked, and then EigenLayer takes that liquid staked ETH and then uses it to secure chains that opt into it. And then once you that restaking it is why it's called restaking it. You then that's kind of the end of the story, right? The ETH is then locked up and you now have ETH staked, restaked to it.
I wonder how long it will take until someone comes up with liquid staking your liquid stake in a restaking protocol.
Like,
I mean, can you could you not already take liquid stake tokens and then just bridge them? Oh, I guess no, because they tend to be native to whatever the native the
protocol. Well, that would be a different contract than the original.
Yeah, because they're always additional derivatives, aren't they? So you'd have to create an additional derivative, and then there would be like, I guess, arbitrage between the two, the derivative of the derivative and the derivative of the so there would be arbitrage between the original, the derivative, and the derivative of the derivative, right?
Arbitrage. Yeah.
Arbitrage. You know, the word.
Yeah, it's too much restaking.
Do you know, it's like that scene in the in The Big Short where they're like where it's just like, well, what you do is you take a bunch of mortgage-backed securities and then you build them up into a package, and then you build a bunch of those up into a package, and then you take some of like the credit and you just swish it back around, and then what if you then like have an option on one of those things and then you put that into a package? That would be pretty cool, huh? And like the extent, I can't even remember how silly it gets, but like when he's talking about all of the different derivatives that they offer, and the guy's like, are you actually insane? And the guy's like, no, this is pretty cool, huh? That's kind of how I feel when people start talking about liquid staking.
Like, I mean, it's basically like what Fortis, except they're trying to take themselves a little more seriously.
It's the weird thing, isn't it? Like, I shouldn't have been refreshed by it, but I was refreshed by it. I had an interaction at an event the other day, and excitingly for a fucking nerd like me that just has to go to academic stuff now occasionally just to be meet in the room, in the kind of just somebody with a name badge from my university, even though I'm a nobody, should be there from our department or our bit of the department, so that somebody is there and then can just tell everybody else what happened, basically. So okay, so I've drawn that short straw a couple of times. Anyway, I ended up talking to somebody who, because of Chatham House rules, I can't actually say who it was or what they did, but relatively serious organization, and is relevant to a discussion in stable coins. I revealed that I worked as an engineer on blockchain and worked in blockchain, and they excused themselves from the conversation and walked away. It was amazing. They're like, oh, excuse me, I think there's only a few minutes left of the coffee break.
I'm out.
and there was like a group of several people, and they at me offering a thought as a representative of the blockchain industry in that moment, they excused themselves and left, and I was like, made it, lads. I don't know. That's like, they weren't impolite about it or anything. I think it might genuinely just a bit of like, they're like, who knows if there is about to be mentioned a criminality, but I'm out. Like, I'm just fully out. This is a turn I didn't expect this conversation to take, and I'm going to politely excuse myself and go investigate a biscuit and maybe some coffee. But it, the first of all, it's hilarious. Second of all, it was hilarious. And third of all, it reminded me very refreshingly how funny and stupid our industry is, in a good way sometimes. And I was thinking, you know what? Actually, for all of the stuff I hate about crypto, I do like the fact that you can work in a space that makes people react like that because of the amount of nonsense that happens on a daily basis. And, you know, we're just trying to make a buck, trying to get our head around this bullshit, make a buck, not go to prison, right? And
well, the more ironic thing I've found is that if you bring up this is like excluding conferences. When you go to conferences, it's like a different beast. But if you're like in everyday life and somehow crypto comes up, generally the person that brings it up is someone you don't want to talk to. And so guessing it probably holds true for the person you were talking to, where they're like, huh, I'm going to excuse myself from this. If you're at a conference, everyone's talking crypto, so obviously you're talking crypto, right? Like, you know you're getting into. But if it's just some random person you're talking to, you know they're going to bring up Doge or Elon Musk or something like that, and you're just going to be like, oh, God.
Yeah, I kind of thought, So in my slight defense, right, when it's an academic situation where discussion of payments, regulation, and somebody has already mentioned stablecoins, I felt like maybe, because the problem is, like, if you're just like, if somebody's like, oh yeah, you're from which university? Okay, are you tenure there? Like that kind of is the straightaway question. Everybody is bollock measuring. You know, same as like any conference, anything like that. Like, people are always trying, but I mean, I guess also it's the UK class system and everything, right? People are always trying to measure where you sit in the pecking order and whether they need to take you seriously, right? And I'm a PhD researcher, so you don't need to take me seriously. I am a fucking nobody, right? And I mean, I suppose that in a business setting and a fintech setting or whatever, I run a business described as categorized as a micro business, right? So you don't need to take me seriously there either, right? At all. There's really no scenario in my life in which I should be taken seriously now I think about it. But nevertheless, right? If you're in a situation like that and you're like, oh, I actually have something to add here, but I'm not a tenured academic, I'm just a PhD researcher, but my credibility on this subject rests on the fact that I've worked in this sector for like 4 years, and I've seen some shit, man, like notwithstanding the fact that I actually actively research this stuff now. So, you know, I felt like I was able to chip in like the semi-grounded opinion, but it was funny. It was funny, beautiful, amazing to just get, because it was such a polite as well. It wasn't like, I've had some really rude interactions recently at like networking events and things where it's just people being rude because they judge that you're not useful to them or whatever, and they just like literally do the British equivalent of telling you to fuck off to your face, right? Which is you're like, okay, that's actually a bit rude. But this situation, it wasn't rude. It was the most deliberately unrude way of extricating yourself from immediately having to say a single other word. It was amazing. I love it. I love that kind of shit. Like, I grew up in the south of England, so anyway. But shit, payments is like when you hear about how payments regulation stuff works and how the underlying stuff, like how the banks do it in the UK and the US, like, I had no idea how different the underlying clearing mechanisms were. Like, again, fucking showing why you shouldn't really take me seriously on anything, because clearly I don't know anything. It was really, really interesting, actually.
I don't know if it's still the way it does it in the US, but when I worked at FinTech 5 or so years ago, it was still horrible. It was still basically all manually done. Like, yeah, you're sending a transaction through a database, whatever, if you want to do a transfer on like Chase, but it all had to ultimately be done by hand.
Yeah, there's loads of so apparently the Aussies have relatively good systems, and they modernized a lot of it, and that kind of came up several times. So, you know,
we've talked about it on this podcast before.
Well done, Null, because apparently I know that you were the driving force of that policy shift. So, you know,
I did think frequently and hardly about how shit the banking system was all the way leading up until they fixed it.
So what you're saying is that in a kind of occult magic sense, you may have used occult magic to influence the Australian government via kind of spectral means to change the law.
Yeah, like, I would sit there on the dunny, I'd think to myself, you know what? I can send an instant message. I can text someone a message and they get it straight away. Why can I not text someone money and they get it straight away? Why do I have to wait a day? It's fucking bullshit. They just want the interest overnight. And then And then all of a sudden they fixed it. And I was like, well, ESP.
There you go. Yeah, we have like faster payments in this country, which is for up to, I think, up to £1 million. They're supposed to clear within, I don't know what the SLA on is. I think it's about 20 minutes is the outside, but typically it's a second.
It used to be like fucking 3 days or some bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it used to be, I surmise that they only did that so they could keep that shit in a clearing account and get interest on it.
I think it was because it was the same process for big payments as small payments.
Yeah, but I don't what do know, they have I, to do, like, oh, fuck, yeah, someone's made a payment. I need to, like...
Yeah, yeah, because I don't know if it's the
same. Get out my ledger.
Well, essentially, yeah. I mean, because I don't know what it's like in Australia. But... Well, I guess it would probably be similar to... Because the system we had that was, like, 3 days, I think is now 1 day in this country, but it's for, like, high-value payments, right? So it handles, like, a tiny volume, but, like, it's like something like 11 trillion pounds a year, or maybe a day. It could be a day for all I fucking know. I'd have to look at the numbers, but there's like a system called CHAPS that is like that. And then there's faster payments, which is for lower value stuff. But what I didn't realize was that the government literally in like 2000 were just like, we're just going to do a review on whether we can do something for payments. And then faster payments came out of that. And it's kind of actually pretty good. It's quietly a very good thing. And I was just like,
even 20 minutes seems unnecessary. Is that like interbank, or is that, because we used to have a thing where you know, if it was interbank, it could be done a little bit quicker, like maybe, you know, an hour or so. But if it was another bank, it would still take overnight.
Yeah, so it's any bank to any bank in the UK.
Yeah, okay. Because then like all of our banks UK collaborated and they built accounts. I think the big four banks here created like a business and then created the back end thing where they now all
communicate. It's something like that here. I think they're still what's it called, Town Clearing House or whatever it's called, the people that run CHAPS, I think, is technically the people that run faster payments, maybe, or is it Pay UK? Well, one of the two, I don't know. I think it's 38 institutions run it. But like, you know, to be clear, like I think 20 minutes is like the maximum it will take. In reality, it's usually about a second.
It's instant,
functionally, you know. To the extent that like there's a falafel place near me where you can only pay in cash or you can bank transfer them, and they just have a iPad next to the thing and they just go, they just flick it to refresh,
just
and
they enter, enter your banking information into this
iPad. Well, no, they just have
you
their
can bank. Use this to log into your internet banking.
They just have their details on the till, right?
And
you can't it just says it. User reference, like when you literally just order your food, like a pizza, two falafels, whatever, they just go, okay, cool, there's a number at the bottom of the receipt, put that in. So you know, that's very uncommon, I should say, but that you do occasionally, usually in kind of, I don't know, like, yeah, ethnic supermarkets and stuff like that, see people using faster payments for that sort of thing.
So I want to go out on a limb here and say that I think the big four collaborated with Ripple when they built the back end. Could be bullshit, could be talking out my ass, but I think I read that somewhere.
Ripple.
So you can, you know, you're going to confuse that instantly with the blockchain. Not the blockchain. So like Ripple have settlement stuff that they build completely separate to like the XRP. They just constantly sell XRP to run the rest of their business with.
It's very important at the heart of a good function.
At the heart of every fucking multinational, there must be a shit coin that you can sell.
You need a shit coin to dub pub retail. That's like really fucking...
Really is the only way to do business in now day and age.
I mean, the thing is, all you have to do is say that with a slightly more serious tone of voice now, and I reckon we can make some real money here.
Look, I'm not trying to be the central bank manager here. All right. I'm just fucking musing out loud. Schulte.
Well, I mean, what's even better than that is one of our presidential candidates is doing that. They created a token that cannot be traded.
What?
Yay.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Trump created it's called like World Coin or something like that. And it has like sending disabled.
Trump's so, like, already been funding his fucking bullshit with bullshit. He sold NFTs.
This one just came out though. And you can't send the tokens or trade them. So you buy it. And so
he's just selling them.
Yes.
He's just taking advantage of the election hype. Yeah. Fucking hell.
That is bad. I saw the, did you see, I don't know, this could have even
commemorative
been
coin, Schulze. It's a commemorative coin.
It's a very commemorative coin. did you see that? I don't know if this was actually true or whether it was just like full satire and it got me good, but there was something about Russell Brand selling magical amulets, protect you against the old 5G to predominantly an audience of American born again Christians. And I was like,
I don't really follow
the news. So I was a bit like, clearly a lot has happened in the time that I've not really been paying attention.
I haven't seen or heard anything from Russell Brand in a while. I mean, he's not from our country, but presumably he finally went mad.
I think what happened, so there was a thing in British comedy, apparently. So this thing I do know because I've been to I don't follow the news. I've been to a comedy show in the last 2 years. I gather on the comedy circuit, it was like on the British comedy circuit, it was an open secret that he was a sexual predator and that his lawyers had made it very fucking clear that if any comics who didn't have very, very large amounts of money were to say anything in their sets or say anything publicly, then he would libel the shit out of them until they were fucking dead, basically. And no jobbing comic who's not like a movie star has the money to go against that in court. And the way the libel laws are in this country, it like they can be quite onerous in terms of the burden of proof. I think somebody came forward who was a victim, and then once that happens, I think it might have even been that somebody then mentioned there was something. There's a bunch of hacks you can get around the libel laws in this country. One of them you can do is you mention something in parliament for discussion as a news item, and then after that it's parliamentary privilege, all bets are off, man, you can report it. I'm pretty sure
wait, so if you have something to bring up, you can be like, I'd like to bring to stand that Russell Brand is a sexual predator, please discuss.
So it's not, I don't think it's usually done quite that unsubtly, but I'm also pretty, but there are cases where a politician will just slip it in during parliamentary proceedings, because then it gets written down in the permanent record and you have parliamentary privilege, meaning you can't be sued for libel. And then it can be reported by the newspapers. So at that point, whilst libel laws sort of still do apply in practice, it can be reported. So the effect is moot. Right. So there are sometimes things that come out, particularly abuse of power type things in the UK, where it turns out somebody's been trying to sue people over keeping something quiet, like a scandal, for a long period of time. And then an MP will hear about it and they'll just mention it in parliament because they know they're immune from prosecution. And then a journalist will notice that and then be able to go and investigate it or whatever. These things happen. But I don't think that's how the Russell Brand thing came about. Like, can we all just acknowledge for a second, honorable gentlemen and ladies, that Russell Brand may or may not be a nonce?
Yeah, ravel.
Although, to be fair, to be fair to a sexual predator, I don't even know why you said to be fair. I don't think it was a nonce. I think he's just a garden variety sexual predator, which obviously, you know, is there a hierarchy of bad? I don't even know. So anyway, there you go. That's the thing. But it's interesting because there's basically, if you watch British comedy or like follow it or watch interviews with British comedians, like a bunch of them have, like, there was like a Louis Theroux, I think, interview a little while ago. I want to say it was like, I think it was with the Canadian comedian, Catherine Ryan, who's a bit hit miss, but she did a good comedy show, I think, about a few years ago, like 2016 or something. Anyway, there's like a bit in the interview, and there's a couple of these floating around that you can find where something kind of gets mentioned, and Louis Theroux or the interviewer, depending on which interview you're thinking of, is like, oh yeah, so what's that about? And they just go, I'm literally not going to legally talk about that. And they're like, it's like massive step change in what was quite a casual conversation. It's like, what? It's just like, that would lead me to talking about an incident and an anecdote about somebody that I have no basis other than my own opinion and my own experience. And I do not want to fall afoul of British libel law, so I will stop talking about that now, and you can do your own investigations. And then the interviewer, like in all of these cases, would be like, what the fuck? But yeah, like nobody talked on the record about it for fucking ages. So yeah, wild stuff. Wild stallions.
The more I learn about British law, the more I realize why America exited stage left.
Yeah, I mean, Britain's a pretty fucking weird place. Like, I mean, people genuinely think the royal family are more important than them, which is pretty crazy. Like, they were just born. But hey, you know, like, you know, you guys have a de facto aristocracy as well. I mean, like, people from who their parents were president, people are like, that seems reasonable. And it's like, that's called a monarchy. That's called a royal family. These guys all marry each other. It's just a monarchy by another name, I guess.
I've always been curious why we're getting off topic, but I've always been curious why oligarchy is really only a word used for like Russian oligarchs. Whereas like, I mean, like Elon Musk should be considered an oligarch, right? Or maybe Buffett, because Buffett owns real estate. So what is the, why is it specifically Russia that has oligarchs, but it doesn't apply to other places? But that's like neither here nor there. That's just popping in and can go away.
Okay. So no, it's, hang on. I had looked this up previously. I just needed a quick refresher. It's an oligarchy because they are in the sphere of the president and they are his friends who have become rich by being handed power to do business early on in the days. So the oligarchy is like a group, not a person.
So it's like a blockchain versus so American capitalism is a concentration of wealth, but is still fundamentally a chaotic system on the whole with some collusion. Whereas the Russian version of capitalism is like a blockchain, I think is what Null's trying to say.
An oligarchy in America would be like P. Diddy and Co.
What?
You know, P. Diddy's little group of people? Like the celebrities.
I'm only loosely aware of what's going on there, but I can see what you're saying. Okay. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on there either. I was just trying to be, you know, up to date. So.
Well, you're more up to date than I am, it looks like.
Well, you know, like, take that away.
The chat has kind of rightly suggested that that's the technical term for that is more of a plutocracy.
Right. Yeah. Zing. In the US.
Okay.
Oligarchy is like a Greek thing. It's like a Greek word. But yeah, anyway, that's what it is. So the oligarchy, and they use it in Russia because when they, like, that's sort of what happened after they removed communism, or sort of came out of communism, is that people who were close to the people in power were given the keys to the kingdom, really, to start industry. They were handed state-run industry to run themselves privately and then became, like, ultra-rich.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I didn't expect an actual answer to come out of this, but that makes sense.
Don't even know why I know that. That's probably
common, relatively common knowledge.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, well, yeah.
I only looked it up relatively recently. I think I wanted to know what the word meant as well. I was like, what the fuck is this oligarchy they keep saying?
Well, actually, so like a really good point would be, the guy who founded Wagner Group, the guy who got assassinated a while ago.
Wagner.
Prigozhin, he was literally Putin's cook, wasn't he, originally?
Yeah.
He was like what's the film where it's like Steven Seagal's an overweight chef, but you're supposed to believe that he's like a Kung Fu Navy SEAL, and Tommy Lee Jones is the bad guy. You know the one? Under Siege. It's definitely
he moves so fucking slow.
Oh my god, seriously. Have you seen any of the, like, they're too bad to watch. They're genuinely too bad to watch, but there are summaries on YouTube. Have you seen any of Steven Seagal's output in the last 10 years? It's fucking insane. Like, it's genuinely, like, not only is it conceptually mind-bending in terms of like the worldview required to make the films, but also like he is now, he must be close to 70 and he has not taken a lot of care of himself. He's had a hamburger or two. And it's just like there's credulity and then there's this. And it's, and also like he has that weird connection to the Russian state as well, doesn't he? He's like a Russian shill, I think. So
maybe that's where his money for these movies.
Well, I was gonna say, who knows where the money's coming from? Because there's quite often when there's like a big political scandal that one day will come to light, there's quite often dodgy movies somewhere in the org chart of the impending political crisis. Like the guy, what was his name? I was about to say, what was the name of the guy that, there was a huge scandal a few years ago and I was trying to remember the name of the guy. And then I remember the guy was called Guy Hans, I think. His name was literally Guy. And it turned out that one of the many things that he had been doing, aside from the main thing that was the scandal, was using a loophole in a tax thing to encourage British films to be made, to make all these weird hyper-low budget B-movies, just so there were B-movies on the books of the companies, and then they could claim these tax reliefs. And then these movies were never shown. They were just made and then put on a shelf somewhere. And there was like a documentary about some of this stuff, and they got hold of some of them. And they were just like, it's like the man with the lobster hands for hands or something. And they were just, I mean, whatever you think that film, that what that film sounds like is what it was. And meanwhile, he was like, you know, buying up distressed businesses and then running them into the ground.
buying distressed businesses and making them more distressed.
Yeah, well, so I think he was like one of the first, I think that was one of the first scandals where somebody worked out that it was in a lot of cases more profitable when a business is experiencing, let's say like a liquidity crunch on its balance sheet, like a high street retailer, let's say, to just take them over and then gut the company for parts and then just, but have no interest in,
Companies that are worth more liquidated than they are as operating companies. Yeah,
exactly. Like you don't want it because it's a going concern, even though it could be brought back to being a going concern. You just want to.
Well, it might still be profitable, but it is more profitable to just fucking sell it.
Yes, just rip it apart and then sell the chunks off. Yeah, exactly. So it was that kind of disaster capitalism. I think he was one of the first people who was kind of using that sort of playbook, and one of the things that they were doing on the side to juice their balance sheet was making these fucking bananas B movies that never got aired. Or if they got aired, they got showed at like one cinema once at like 2 a.m. I'll see if I can find a link for that for the show notes so that Usurper genuinely is like, what the hell have you guys been on? I just have this very, very vivid mental image of a man with two lobster claws, very poorly. Like, we're not talking good prosthetics, bad prosthetics. And that was one of the films.
Schulte, off the movie topic, I have a question for you, friend.
Can it be answered in 2 minutes? Because I have to take off in 2 minutes. Probably. Shoot, and I'll try.
I can't even say it in 2 minutes. So,
okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you can. Is there another representative from L5 that can come up here and answer my question?
Unlikely. You want to know about Lavender 5 specifically? Like,
well, it's just to do with services you run. I wanted to have a technical conversation about aspects, but that's all right. We can do that next week. I'm not going anywhere.
No, unfortunately not. Erdemann is already asleep by now, normally, I think. And other folks are doing other things.
What TZ is Erdemann?
What?
What time zone? UTC plus zone.
2, I think.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. I hardly ever see him.
Yeah.
This is too far offset for Null. Is your engagement that you're going to? I've forgotten what it was. What kind of, are you rushing off for care duties or are you rushing off for a prior engagement?
Care duties for someone else's prior engagement. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. I thought about just bringing my little dude here to look after during the podcast, but they make quite a bit of noise, so I thought that might not be like...
They do, don't they?
...to a podcast environment.
Yeah, and he's been especially tough lately. He's at this phase where previously he would at least like sleep really well on you. Right now he's like not even sleeping very well. You can get him asleep pretty quick, and then like you'll be in just the right position, and then you like move your arm a little bit because he gets tired, and then he immediately like snaps his eyes open and is super unhappy. And
what's happening, man?
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm just like completely spent because I've been up for about 14 hours at this point, most of it holding a crying baby.
Damn, man. Sorry to hear that. I know your schedule is getting up quite early now as well, so keeping you up late is nuts. Yeah. But hopefully soon will be...
That's my time. All right. See you, bro. Bye, guys. Have fun.
Peace.
So, Deaf Name the Prey, how is your studies coming along? Have you finalized the results from your survey of the people?
Yeah. Proof of stake's fucked. That's the conclusion. But also YOLO, whatever, man. It's fine. So you know what? Okay, so I think something very, very weird has happened, right? Which is that I think the experience of the Juno thing and Howl and all of that, and like working on Howl for nearly a year and writing like a lot of code and having to do a lot of legal stuff and everything, and then that all falling flat on its face because the chain was fucked and all this kind of shit. Like, whatever. I've gone over it a load of times, but I think it's taken a long period of time to like really, like, I don't know, like you can intellectually know something was a pain in the butt, took loads of time, took loads of mental energy, and then fucking ended up as nothing. And I, you know, Juno. Albeit, you know, didn't get as wrecked as some people did. Like, you know, a lot of retail investors got seriously fucking wrecked by that whole mess, including Prop 16. And that's like a really shitty show. And I think that's like, it's a real drag. Like, I feel very, very bad about that because, like, however bad it was for people inside it who really had no control of the plane crashing into the mountain, and I think that includes all of us that worked on it, who weren't in Core One. Like, you know, yeah, at least for a time, I was getting paid by the chain or whatever. And, you know, we did make some money out of the name service and blah, blah, blah. So it didn't leave with nothing. But it's taken like a really, really long time, I think, to get over, to kind of like move on from that or whatever. And I think like I've consistently underestimated the point at which I've actually been over that and ready to re-engage with like crypto at all. And I think what's been interesting about this paper is that in some way, going through the process of having to itemize a bunch of failure modes that you might theorize about a certain type of technical structure to a distributed ledger, but also the incentives that govern it, and also like real world stuff, and also how validators operate, how foundations operate, and how these people do or don't trust each other or do or don't cooperate or whatever, like all that stuff combined, I think weirdly has kind of brought me back around into the tent. Like, not, I wouldn't say like I'm, I don't know. I think I'm too jaded to do the whole go and work for or with a core team again and do the rodeo again, because I think the chance of user harm with where we currently are with the technology is so high that I don't think my conscience can take that, if I'm completely honest. But I think I do feel better about the stuff that we do as a validator, and I'm beginning to feel better about understanding where we're going to go as a business. And so that's not really an answer to the question of like, how is the research going? But the research is going quite well. But I think what the research going well has ended up weirdly doing is making me feel better about, not only better, but I think meant I'm beginning to have more of an idea of where the business is going. And that's not something, is maybe it's something I hoped for. I don't really know, but it's definitely not something I necessarily expected. So yeah. That's a roundabout way of saying good, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's interesting. I mean, yeah. Usually it's life that feeds into your research and not the other way around, I guess. But interesting that you're finding some direction in your business as a result of learnings from research.
But I think it's also like where research leads you, right? If you do research in a fintech context, in a financial computing context, in a computer science department, in a city which has one of the biggest financial services setups in the entire world, you just end up encountering more stuff in that space, right? Just by necessity. That's like where the department is aiming brain power for partnerships and blah blah blah. It's where the university is aiming stuff. It's where the city itself center of gravity is, right? And I think like you, for all the things that are wrong about the space we're in and all of the fucking bullshit that means that when you're at a family event or a social event and somebody mentions crypto and you're just like, you roll your eyes and then you remember you work in this space. But like that feeling where you're like, oh God, like all the ways that crypto is cringe, I guess is what I'm getting at, because there are a bunch of ways in which it's quite cringe. You do realize that like there are some very strong benefits, like the ability to enter as a business or as a technical practitioner where you know what you're doing and you have an idea of like what you want to build out is actually quite unmatched currently, especially in the market we're in tech at the moment, where there's just layoffs everywhere. Even in the context of a bear market, I think there's probably more opportunity for small and early stage companies in the crypto market than there is in almost any other bit of the tech market. But I think there's also, I think more than opportunity, because just opportunity is like whatever, man. Like there are still problems to be solved that aren't fucking derivatives that are interesting, right? And because we're in a bear market, no cunt is trying to solve them. And that's fine. That's okay. But we're not going to be in a bear market forever. And also, we're not going to be in a market where every token is fucking volatile all the time. Like you can see this with the interest in stablecoins and whatnot. Like the fact that things run on ledgers doesn't necessarily necessitate a shitcoin, and it won't forever. But I mean, we were talking about this the other day. I was at a conference on payments. I sent you a message saying something like, "Oh, everybody's bigging up Australians for being good at payments." And you were like, "Oh, of course we are, because we're great cunts," or something like that. And I said, well, what's interesting, right, is that the peak of ambition for a bank doing payment stuff seems to be recurring variable payments, RVP, recurring variable payments. I think it's RVP, something like that. Anyway.
Which seems just ridiculously simple.
Yeah. So, I mean, I sent you the API documentation, I think, for this, which is just, it's literally an if statement around a direct debit, essentially, right? And to be fair to the people, from my understanding, which is very limited, and people's private opinions, which obviously can't be trusted necessarily, but whatever, that there are people that want to do more with the technology than just that. But you know, even the regulatory position around that is complicated, let alone the technology and getting other banks involved to build supporting infrastructure. So the long and short of this, right, is that at a thing about payments, the most the two things that were like these are the ambitious things were open banking is essentially a way of saying a way of transferring money point to point that doesn't involve Visa or MasterCard in the UK, because Visa and MasterCard own and control most of the payment rails, right? So it's a way of doing a payment without having a debit card or a credit card, right? So typically it's talking about bank-to-bank payments. The second highest ambition thing is recurring variable payments, which is an if statement around a payment. And so I come away from that thinking, look, for all the faults, for all the problems, for all the stupidity, for all the venality, for all of the outright fraud and criminality in our sector, if you look for it, the one thing that there is in this sector is ambition. Often there is too much ambition, like ambition so far beyond teams' ability to technically deliver it that it's actually a bit embarrassing for everybody involved. but there is nevertheless ambition. And so, you know, I kind of came away, you know, I had a few of these situations recently where I've kind of come away from stuff and gone, okay, well, you know, but whatever happened to, you know, reach for the stars, kid? Like, you know, I think maybe we said in this sector, we sometimes do it for all the wrong reasons, but like, and you know, maybe hit and hope, you know, written on a piece of A4 paper isn't a business plan, but like, I guess it's like you spend a little bit of time in the kind of traditional finance sector and you kind of realize, well, that, yeah, you know, especially in that kind of sublime to the ridiculous type contrast or comparison, right? You know, like you can end up feeling a bit more positive about all the shit that we do, like in terms of like, fuck, something useful's got to come out of it, because at least things are being tried and things are really there's not like for better or for worse, there's not the fear of failing necessarily, right? And you know, there is a question of whether or not it's appropriate to come into a situation where you're dealing with real money and real people's money with an attitude that you're not afraid to fail. But at the moment, there is that luxury of experimentation in this space. And I think that is a positive thing. It's actually a very positive thing in a lot of ways. And I think the one thing that I'm still not comfortable with is the way that teams abuse trust, I think. But I am more positive about the opportunities in this space. And I'm getting more so the more that I engage with the traditional finance sector, I suppose. It's the teams, it's not the sector that's bumming me out. It's the way the teams treat their users that's bumming me out still a bit. But hey.
Hey. Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do? You know, like, that's not within my control, man. That's.
Yeah, I get it. But like the user space is also like quite often people coming into this industry are like, you know, have a get rich quick type of attitude as well. Like they're trying to, I'm not saying this is always the case, but a lot of times, you know, the users are here to try and, you know, use a system that is quite chaotic and broken in a way that they can make a quick profit. So
sure, and I think they're 100% encouraged to do that. Like I think it's a two-way street, you're right, but I do think there is a little bit of there's like an asymmetry at play where, you know, if a normal rank and file user gets wrecked for $1,000, for most people, that is a lot of money. And like for a foundation and for some of the people that are kind of at the top of this food chain in this industry, that would be chicken feed. And I think there is a little bit of I think my caution over user harm is that we are in a space kind of politically and economically where people are, the fact that get rich schemes are in not just in crypto, but throughout the economy. And that's always been the case, but the density and intensity at the moment speaks to a kind of, there is a broader political crisis going on in developed economies at the moment. And this is a symptom, not the cause. I recognize that, but I think it is still necessary to kind of say, well, look, you know, all other things being equal, I don't think people would engage with it for those reasons with the intensity that they do. Perhaps that's naive of me, but I think there is opportunism from both sides, but I think the power dynamic is highly asymmetrical. I think that a lot of that kind of that ends up being a wealth transfer effectively to the people at the top of these projects. Like it's difficult. I think it's problematic, right?
Well, I mean, if you take a deep look at any project in crypto at all, including Bitcoin, every asset is speculative at the moment. There's like, if this was traditional finance, you would say every asset is speculative. There's no technical fundamentals behind any of them really that are going to guarantee or even have a high chance of providing a return at the rate of investment. So but also like it's kind of a reflection of our traditional finance markets anyway, like in you know, share trading and stuff like that. It's those markets are used as well by people who need to raise capital to build things, and they are not necessarily always going to turn a profit for the people investing in them either. So, I mean, they're kind of like pretty similar in that respect. It's just that the frequency of projects that won't make it in crypto would be much larger.
Yeah, but it's so I think it's the point of like the if you market something as a get rich scheme, you know what you're doing, and the reality is that the people who are you're selling to are not going to get rich, right? More often than not, they're going to be exit liquidity. And
like the thing is in crypto though, people don't really market things as get rich quick schemes. They market them as this is what we're doing and here's a sale, buy some. Like no one, I don't think I've ever seen someone say you're going to profit in this way.
Not directly from the foundations, no, but they do.
Like the only profiting that you can do in crypto is fucking trading and staking. Like there's
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But like
this is what I mean.
Through activity. The only way money gets made is through activity, right? In the industry, there's no product that's tangible. There's no like, you know, right. In an economy, you have inputs and you have outputs. Like all the outputs in crypto are like intangibles.
They're just shit coins. But this is my point, right? It doesn't have to be that way because you can implement any kind of payment system, any kind of payment rails, public or private, smart contracts or not, with the technology pile, like the pile of stuff that we've got here, all the Legos now. We have enough of them, right? We have enough of them. Any of the stuff that's way more ambitious than anything they're doing in TradFi, we can look at that pile of Lego and go, okay, cool. We can throw this together in a way that makes sense, right? Now,
I should clarify a couple of things before you continue. That sounded quite pessimistic. However, like you say, people are investing and things do get built and technology is being created. So there are things coming out of it. And like you say, there is a big pile of different technologies all over the place now in crypto that can be deployed to actually do something IRL if people, you know, if the regulators and stuff could catch up to that and be able to allow implementation of that.
Well, but this is the thing. The regulators allow it right now in a lot of jurisdictions. In most jurisdictions, if you want to do something, you can do it. The point is that nobody's buying, right? The point is that real serious...
But it can't have the... Like, it needs to be a back-end thing. It can't have the... You can't take a crypto project and put it into production, you know, in common society. You can take the technology that's created in crypto.
No, exactly.
Use it 100%. In a back-end capacity.
Right, exactly. You know, so yeah. I'm saying exactly that. We're agreeing, right? But I'm saying that the difficulty is that then now you are in a tender process for a major bank, a regulated entity with low ambition, low appetite for risk, and high distrust of any vendor that doesn't have 5,000 engineers on staff and you know, all of the ISOs that you need and all the trappings and whatnot. And that's the kind of, you know, we could wait forever to get from the stage right now where we're a toddler shitting our pants to something real. Because the problem is the gap between where we are now and something real is going to almost certainly have to involve some kind of private money. And by private money, I mean like non-central bank money, you know?